Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on BBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Peter Beckett is from Liverpool, England. Being from Liverpool, it would be hard not to have been influenced by the Beatles, whom he saw play at the Cavern a couple of times when he was very young. Peter was obviously underage at the time the Beatles were playing at the Cavern, but his older brother managed to smuggle him in to the club a few times to see the Beatles and other bands. Listening to the Beatles is why he decided he wanted to spend his life making music. Peter's group called Sky Band relocated to Los Angeles and became a founding member of the band Player, who had a number one hit, a timeless hit, with Baby Come Back in 1977, which Peter co-wrote and sang lead on. The song has been in over 40 movies and TV commercials, and probably the most recent being Transformers. After recording four successful albums, the band split up, and Peter's success as a songwriter began to bear fruit, as his songs were recorded by a variety of artists, including Olivia Newton-John, Kenny Rogers, The Temptations, Heart, Sergio Mendes, Vanessa Hudgens, Grace Slick, to name just a few. Peter also recorded his solo album, which is a great album, by the way, called Beckett, joined the Little River Band for 8 years and wrote several singles for them, and also began composing for film and TV, in addition to continuing touring both as a solo artist and with band. Among his songwriting credits in major movie soundtracks are The Karate Kid, Cocktail, Two of a Kind, Major League, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, Frankie and Johnny, the Al Pacino, Michelle Pfeiffer film, Basic, and Terminator 3. And he received a Grammy nomination for St. Elmore's Fire. That's a lot. Please welcome the voice of soft rock legends Player and lead singer and songwriter of the timeless classic hit Baby Come Back, Peter Beckett, to Interviewing the Legends. Hello, Peter.
Hey, Ray, how you doing?
Man, you've done a lot.
I was just getting very impressed. I thought, who's this guy he's talking about? I'm real impressed with this guy.
You know, I could go on. I mean, this, you know, I had to cut it down.
Oh, please don't.
Well, you got a couple of dates coming up. I had John Ford Coley on the show, and we talked about the tour you guys were doing together, which is really cool.
Yeah, we're just wrapping that up, actually, but we've got some one-offs after the tour with the Rock the Yacht tour is kind of done, but we've got, like, several, you know, like I said, one-off gigs. One of them being the Tillis Center coming up this weekend, I think, this coming weekend. I think John Ford's on that.
Yeah, you've got September 7th, Ambrosia and Friends, right? That's in New York, in Brookville, New York?
Yep.
And the 26th, that's the one I think you're talking about with Ambrosia, John Ford Coley. That's one of the Rock the Yacht shows, I guess, at Levitt Pavilion.
Oh, yeah, that's probably the last of them then. That's probably the last one. Yeah, we just did a whole bunch. I just got back a few days ago. I'm still a bit beaten up from it. You know, they had us going from New York to Louisiana.
Right.
Get up it next morning, going from Louisiana to New York, back from New York to Mississippi.
admire you guys for doing that. You know, that's probably the hardest part. Once you're on stage, everything's cool, you know?
Yep. Well, that's the good part. I still enjoy the traveling. It gets a little wearying these days, you know. A lot of flying,
yeah.
Yeah.
I just talked to Dionne Warwick a couple of days ago, man, and she's, you know, she's getting up there in age, but man, oh man, she's still on the road. She does, you know, international tours. She'll be in Vegas for about 3 months, you know.
Yep.
It's amazing.
She's great. She always was great, you know. She's a classic.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it keeps you younger, you know, by getting out there, you know.
Yeah, I think it does, actually. It doesn't do your knees any good.
No.
It keeps your mind younger. I can tell you that. I have two young boys, which really keeps me. I have my own son is only like 17, and my stepson is 18.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, they play soccer, baseball, all the stuff, and you have to be there. So for a guy my age, which I'm not going to disclose, it can get a little harrowing at times. But it keeps you young, as you say.
So what kind of soccer did he like? Did you teach him right? And that, you know,
well, you know, I coached him for a while, but being from Liverpool, where everybody's soccer crazy, you know.
I know.
I played when I was a kid. I used to get crazy. I didn't make a good coach because I screamed and yelled and, you know, got too excited.
I know.
Got fired after a couple of weeks. So, he doesn't let me come anymore. He lets me come if I just stay in the background and be quiet.
That's funny. I went through the same thing with my son. He was a goalie.
There you go.
When he was little, I used to toughen him up. You know, he'd stand there at the goal and I'd kick balls at him, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what you have to do.
Exactly. But, you know, soccer's become, you know, pretty popular in the U.S. You know, it took a while.
Oh, yeah, it's getting bigger and bigger for sure, especially since the U.S., you know, female team won and everything.
Exactly.
Did you follow Liverpool and their wonderful year?
I did.
Everybody loves Liverpool. I've got friends from everywhere, from London and Chelsea and all these other good teams, and they all love Liverpool.
Yeah.
They're all Liverpool fans.
It's a good team. Really good team. I followed Arsenal for a while, too.
Why?
I don't know. They just kind of intrigued me.
They're a great team.
Yeah.
Kidding.
Yeah. You know, it is so cool that you were at the Cavern Club watching the Beatles. I mean, how many people could say that?
I was just there 2 weeks ago, my friend. I went back to my nephew.
Right.
He went to Oxford University, and he's an engineer for Formula One racing cars, currently Renault.
Wow.
And he's been with Mercedes and Lotus. And he's, you know, he's 30 now. He's brilliant. And he got married in Oxford, and so I flew over there. And while I was there, I thought I'd zip up to Liverpool for a few days. And this is a true story. I went up Matthew Street where the cavern is. I couldn't remember it real well because it's a bit Disneylanded out now, if you know what I mean.
It was
just an alley with a dirty old club when I was a kid. And they had they knocked it down to build a parking lot. Then they realized the mistake and they rebuilt it. And it's on the same grounds now. And it looks just like it, except they've got an extra stage and an extra room on the side. But the original club is like still there, and it convinced me, you know. But when I was going in, there's these two bouncers on the door, and I was with my wife, and this bouncer goes, okay, that'll be £5 each. And I went, let's not bother. I went to walk out. My wife said, he used to play here 45 years ago. He played here like 30 times. And he saw the Beatles play here a couple of times, you know. And he said, how did he get in? He said, well, there was a bouncer here at the time. Let him in, you know. He used to say, go on in for a few minutes, then get the hell out of here, you know.
Really?
You're too young.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He said, that was my dad.
Oh, man.
I swear to God, I posted it on Facebook. If you go onto the Player Facebook page,
right.
that there's a little movie, and I'm standing with the guy.
Wow.
And he said, that was my dad. And where the real door is, which is sealed up now, there's a picture of his dad.
Wow.
You know, from the 60s, leaning against the door. He's like some tough old dude, you know. And really interesting. And we had a real good laugh about it. And then I went in and I actually shot a little movie in there. You know, it was great. Sitting on the stage.
Do they still have the...
It's a lot cleaner now than it was when I was there.
Oh, I bet it is.
Oh, my God. I mean, it was one of the dirtiest old places, you know. Now it's great. It's like, smells like a poodle parlor.
Do they still have that wall with everybody's the band names on it? You know,
yes, they did.
Yeah.
It's copied, of course, because they knocked it down, you know, but what they did is they recreated it. It looks exactly the same.
That's cool.
The original part looks exactly the same. They recreated the back of the stage where it had, you know, all the bands written on there and the whole thing. And the dressing room was right behind there. And I sat on the stage and did a little, my wife shot a little 5-minute movie.
Oh, cool.
I didn't think they were going to let us do, but they did.
Yeah.
We made friends with them, you know.
That's pretty cool.
So that was interesting. I'll tell you what's really strange is to be a tourist in your hometown.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when was the last time you've been back to Liverpool since then?
Well, my mum died about 7 years ago, and that was the last time I went back. But I didn't do any tourist stuff.
Right.
You know, obviously, I just went to the funeral and stuck around for a few days and came home to L.A. But before that, it was a long time, you know.
Wow. Yeah, I almost had a chance to visit Liverpool. I had a dry cleaning business. It was a plant, and it was a franchise, but it was owned by a company in Liverpool called the Johnson Group.
Really?
Yep, the Johnson Group. And
the Johnson Group.
Yeah. And I was supposed to take a tour to Liverpool, but then I pulled out of the franchise for reasons.
Well, you would love it. I mean, for tourists, I'll tell you, my wife was really impressed with it, because I tell her all these stories when I was a kid there, and it was real rough.
Yeah.
Sailors, dock road, the whole thing.
Right.
You know, bottles flying. It was a rough place.
Mm.
And, you know, she had all those stories in her head, and I took it. And, of course, it's been totally gentrified. And the air is clean now because there's no more coal. There
right.
used to be coal fires when I was a kid. And the river, they actually have fish in the river again, you know. And she's walking around and she's going, is this the place you were telling me about? This place is beautiful. And I'm going, it does look pretty good, doesn't it? You know? So they've definitely fixed it up. It's actually very nice now.
Awesome. Yeah, I think, I met a few people. Let's see, Joey Mullen from Liverpool.
Yeah, I know Joey.
Yeah. Good guy, and also, Peter Best, Pete Best, I've had him on the show as well. A few other guys I think I've had from Liverpool.
How about Terry Sylvester?
No, never had Terry Sylvester, no.
I should get him on, he's a good guy.
Yeah, I should do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, as a matter of fact...
Hall of Famer from the Hollies, you know.
Yeah, that's right. I love the Hollies, they're a great band. Yeah. Really good
I've done a bunch of gigs with him recently, some of these yacht rock things. I've
That's
done
right.
I went to actually Ecuador
right.
and did a couple of gigs with him down there. And then, just like a few months ago, I did some gigs in the south with him.
Right.
He's a funny dude. He was in my favorite band when I was growing up. Before I knew anything about, you know, the Beatles and the whole thing, there was a band that just played around the clubs in Liverpool. And as I became a musician, you know, after that, and his band was called The Escorts. He was a few
right.
years older than me, and they all they did was Everly Brothers stuff, and I loved the Everly Brothers, and their harmonies were beautiful.
Right.
And I used to go to see them wherever they were playing, and, you know, Terry sang all the high parts, and of course, Graham Nash was the high part
yeah.
in Hollies,
yeah.
and when Graham Nash came over to join Crosby, Stills, and Nash, Terry replaced him in the Hollies and, you know, did all the high parts for, 30, 40 years or something.
Right, yeah. You've had, you know, a lot of people, they look at player, a guy like you, and they, you know, baby come back, but they don't do the research and what you did before that. Because you have an amazing career, man. You started, like, in the early 60s.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you were in a couple of good, one band that you were in, was it the Thoughts?
Paladin.
Oh, and Paladin, which was a progressive rock band. And actually, they're on YouTube, and I listened to it. It was a great band.
It was a very progressive band for the time.
Right.
I was only, God, how old was I? I was like 21 or something. And I was out of work and down and out, you know. There was a club called the Speakeasy.
Right.
And there was this girl I knew in the Speakeasy, and I'm in there having a beer, and this drummer had just come back. He was in the Terry Reid band, and they mm-hmm. were, you know, great. And he just finished, they were supporting the Rolling Stones in America, and they'd come back the day before from that tour and split up, and he was looking for a bass player. And this girl, Val, she says, she introduces me to him. She goes, "Hey, Keith, this is Peter Beckett. He's a really good bass player." And he goes, "Oh, Pete, so I hear you're a great bass." I'd never played bass in my life. I was a rhythm guitar. course, you know. And I said, yeah, I'm great. And he says, well, in that case, you'll come up to me to with me to our manor house in Gloucestershire tomorrow, and we'll start working. And I barely had anywhere to live at the time, and I jumped in the car. I went up to this 15th century manor house and worked my butt off to learn the bass over a few days. And then the rest of the band came up, and I was in that band for years, you know.
Wow. Yeah, a lot of guys started out playing bass. You know?
Yeah, no, I didn't start out playing bass. I just played bass in that band. I was like a rhythm player. But that's what you call false bravado. And I mentioned that in Baby Come Back, you know.
Yeah.
You just got to do what you have to do to get by. And I got the gig, and they ended up being a great band. We did two albums, and both albums, the artwork was done by Roger Dean, who did the Yes albums, you
very
know.
Cool.
And it was a great band. I became actually a pretty good bass player over time.
You recorded the second album, Charge, at Apple
yes.
Studios, right?
I don't think there were any video. I mean, there's videos from just playing, but it was way before, you know, video days. I don't think we had. We did a lot of sound stuff, like the John Peel show, all the English stuff, the old Grey Whistle tip.
Right.
But I don't think we. It was more of a progressive college type band. You know, it wasn't a Top of the Pops kind of thing. We never had a pop hit. We sold albums. You know. So it wasn't really a pop band at all. But, you know, it was a great band. And then they split up after a few years. And then I got the call to come to America. Steve Kittner, who I was writing songs with in London.
Right.
Steve's gone on to write, you know, tons of hits for Chicago and Olivia and everybody. But he came over. He had come over a few months before to America, to L.A. And he was... There was this band, they were trying to make like a little super group of writers, and one of the guys left. He was actually quite a well-known producer, and he left, and Steve called me, and he said, do you want to come to America? And I said, are you kidding me? When's the next plane? And before I knew it, I was on a plane, a Pan Am jumbo jet, and flying to Los Angeles, and, you know, I never really went back. Didn't go back for a long time, actually. Many, many years.
Wow. But you had, in the early days, like in 65, you were in a band called The Thoughts, correct?
Well, that was like my first professional band. I was real young then. I was only like 17 or something.
Right.
And I had my first job as it was like in a cotton warehouse in Liverpool downtown.
Really?
And I bumped into this guy who just joined this band called Tiffany's Thoughts.
Right.
Tiffany was a girl singer who was quite well known. She had a minor hit.
Yeah.
And he said, I'm in this band. We're looking for a rhythm guitarist. This is way before all the other stuff. And he said, do you want to come and try out? And I went and tried out, and I got the gig. So I went from, like, I was just playing in you know, garage bands and living room bands, and they were professional. And so with one fell swoop, I was a professional playing all over England and Europe, you know, and I left my job real quick. And that was really the beginning of it for me. And then I did all the Hamburg stuff, all the stuff that Beatles used to do, the Star Club in Hamburg,
right.
And Storyvilles in Frankfurt and Cologne. And I was still a real, real young guy, you know, 17, 18, into 19. And this is all before Paladin, you know.
Yeah.
And they were some of the best days of my life. Great times.
Well, you mentioned Tiffany. She recorded Tears on My Pillow with George Martin, right?
I think she might have, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So she was
a very beautiful girl. She did good for a little while.
Uh-huh.
I actually have no idea what's become of her.
She was in a band called The Liverbirds, I think.
It was called The Liverbirds.
Oh, Liverbirds. Okay.
Yeah, it's actually, I think Liverpool used to be called Liverpool, so I don't know when it became called Liverpool. Liverpool sounds ugly, but they were called The Liverbirds, and, you know, they were one of those all-girl bands. They were real. She was the singer.
Right.
And then she went on to have her own career, and then we backed her. And then we left her. The Thoughts left Tiffany, and we all moved down to London.
Right.
That's when everything started to happen for me, you know, with the real bands.
You were in a show with Brian Epstein, too, right? The Soundorama?
Well, this was a... Brian Epstein had taken on the Savile Theatre, which was a beautiful old theatre on Shaftesbury Avenue in London. And once again, you know, the thoughts were bumming around London. We all lived in one room in a kind of a hotel with like four beds, you know. And we had this manager, Tony Stratton Smith, and he knew Brian Epstein, and he was trying to get us ahead. And they decided to do the first show at this place, the Savile Theatre.
Right.
It was put on by Brian Epstein. And the lineup was, we were going to open the Thoughts, we were going to play for like 30 minutes. Then it was a band called the Cubas, equally unknown, but a little more known than us. Then it was Jimi Hendrix,
yep,
who'd only just gone to London, and he just put Hey Joe out, and he was starting to make a spark before he made it in America. And the closer was The Who. And we went on, they had to literally go out to some of these clothes shops, you know, Carnaby Street, and buy us clothes, because we had no good clothes to wear, you know. And so they bought us these brown corduroy suits, and we went on and we did our thing, and nobody paid much attention. We got polite claps. And then the Cubas went on, they were okay. And then Jimi Hendrix went on, and he lit the place on fire. He also lit his guitar on fire. And I was standing between Townsend and Daltrey.
Wow.
And we were just standing in the wings, and nobody had seen Hendrix, and he did all this stuff. He's like sitting on the whammy bar, you know, pouring the lighter fluid on the guitar, set it on fire, and we're all just standing there with our mouths open. We couldn't believe it, you know. It was just amazing. And it's pretty interesting because, you know, the Who started all that kind of stuff, you know, putting the guitar through the speakers of the amps and all the crazy violent stuff on stage. So it was interesting to see them there in shock and awe, you know. But the interesting thing about this story is Brian Epstein walked into our dressing room before we went on, and he had a bottle of Moët Chandon champagne, which we'd never seen in our lives. You know, it's way too posh for us. And it had a label on it, and it said, good luck on your first gig at the Savile Theatre.
Right.
Brian Epstein, you know. And, of course, the minute he left, we kind of, like, threw the label in the bin, popped the cork, and slugged the bottle of champagne, you know. And if only I had that label now, you know. I can't even tell you. We were, you know, we were such scruffy little guys.
Yeah.
And then I found out later, and this is true, that all four Beatles were in the boxes watching the show.
Really?
Yeah, they had all come to see Jimi Hendrix, you know.
Yeah, of course.
I don't know if they actually saw me play, but it was there. You know.
But you guys,
interesting, huh?
You guys actually, Paladin actually recorded at Apple Studios, isn't that correct?
Yeah, with Jeff Emmerich.
Yeah.
Dead now. He just died last year.
Exactly.
Great guy. Yeah, he did a whole bunch of Beatles stuff. He's got a great book out, actually. With the second album, Charge. That was our second album. We broke up shortly after, unfortunately.
You were talking about Joey Mullen. You were trying to take his place?
No, that's not how it happened.
It's not.
Joey and I are like peas in a pod. We used to look alike when we were young in Liverpool. You know, he was a better guitarist. I was a rhythm player. He was a lead guitarist. But we were kind of the same guy. And when I first went down to London, I got this phone call from this guy. And I don't even know how he got my number. And he's going, we're forming this new band. And we're looking for somebody who's out on a limb, looking for something to believe in, and then he goes off into all this esoteric stuff, you know, and I'm like, this guy sounds a bit weird. And he says, so there's an audition at 10 o'clock in the morning at such and such a place, and would you like to come down? And I said, okay, I'll be there, you know. And that night, I went out and I had a real night out, you know, and I went to a club and I drank too much beer and, you know, met up with some chick. I didn't even wake up till noon the next day, so I never went to the audition, you know.
Oh, really?
Found out shortly later that my friend Joey got the job and did a great job. But truthfully, you know, some things are meant to be, because two of those guys hung themselves.
I know.
You know. And, you know, luckily it wasn't, one of them wasn't me. So things happen for a reason, you know.
You know, Bad Thing was such a great band, you know.
It was such a great band.
Oh, man. I love that group. Such a shame.
But Joey's still around, you know. I spoke to him a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
He does gigs here and there. He's on the trail, you know. He's kicking.
Yeah, he lives, didn't he live like in a weird place? Like, Not Mississippi. I don't remember. Minnesota.
Coast,
he lives in Minnesota.
He does live in Minnesota. That's right. I think
I just can't picture Joey Mullen living in Minnesota for some reason.
Well, I believe his wife was from Minnesota.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, he moved there for her to be with her.
Right. That makes sense. I wanted to go back real quick to the Paladin album. Another thing about that, it was released on Bronze Records, correct?
Yeah.
Which was big time Uriah Heep.
Well, it was bigger than that. It was you know, there was a lot of people on the label eventually.
Right.
We were, a lot of the big bands in London at the time were on that label. And Jerry Braun, you know, he had his own management company, but everything was in-house. He had everything. He was an agent. He was a manager. He had his own record label. And we were kind of like the small guys on the label at first, and then we started to make a little noise, you know. But they put us on a tour with, I think it was for the first album, with Shana Na, who had, this is the weirdest lineup.
That's
they just come, you know, off of Woodstock, and they headlined, and Uriah Heep was second, which was like mega heavy metal band, you know. So you had all these guys in Shana Na dancing around in their gold lame suits doing the 50s stuff, and, you know, and Shana Na on before them, who were just like so freaking loud, it was unbelievable. And we were on first, and we were like this progressive rock band, but, you know, we were pretty rock too. So it was a very strange little tour. I think it only lasted like 2 weeks or something.
Really?
Uriah Heep were on the label. Actually, tell you the truth, I should say this. One of the first guys I shacked up with in, like, roommates when we were young musicians in London when I first moved down was Lee Kurtz. Like, he was the drummer in Uriah Heep.
Right.
And he's been with everybody, Whitesnake, you know, a whole bunch of heavy metal people. And he's very ill right now. Yeah. I called him about 3 weeks ago. He's got all sorts of things wrong with him.
Yeah.
And they're making a documentary about him, but he's not doing real well.
I know. I know Lee. He's a Facebook friend. Yeah. We talk to each other from time to time. He was so happy to finally get credit, you know, from the Aussie days, you know?
The Aussie days, yeah. I forgot to mention him.
Finally, after all these years.
He was a great guy. We got into lots of trouble together in the old days. And I didn't speak to him for a long time, you know, not for any reason.
Yeah.
He was doing his thing, I was doing mine, and we spoke just like a month ago.
He is a good guy. I wish the best for him, man, because I hate to see...
He's fighting, man. He's fighting.
He's got
a lot to fight with. You know, he's got a lot to get through.
They call him the Bear, right?
Well, they may have called him the Bear after I knew him. He was kind of a bear, yeah. I never knew him as the Bear.
No?
But he was a lovely guy.
He is. You know. He really is. I covered Mick Box at the House of Blues here in Orlando and got to hang around with Mick for a while. He's another great guy. I love Mick.
Oh, he's great. Yeah. How long ago was that?
What's that?
How long ago was that?
Oh, let's see. That was probably, I don't know, about 6 months ago, maybe.
Oh, that's pretty recent. Yeah,
about 6 months ago. I've covered. I've had everybody on the show. I've had Ken Hensley, the keyboard player as well. I just had the new keyboard player also from Uriah Heep on the show. They're all good guys. I that's one of my favorite bands. You know, from going way back.
Well, I got another story for you then.
Okay.
Just before Player was formed, I was living in a tiny little place in the Hollywood Hills with my girlfriend, and I got a call from Lee. This is when we were in touch, you know?
Right.
And he said, I've got, like, permission from Jerry Braun.
Mm-hmm.
We want you to come back to England and be the bass player in Uriah Heep.
Wow.
And I accepted the gig.
Uh-huh.
And I was, you know, had nothing going on in L.A. It was just getting too hard, and I accepted the gig, and I was ready to go back and do it, and I don't know what it was, but something said to me, they bought me a ticket and everything, as far as I can remember,
right.
And something just said to me after a couple of weeks, this is not the right choice, which has happened to me many times, as I said before, and I called him, and I said, I can't do it, Lee, it doesn't feel right, and he was real pissed off at me, you know. Everybody was, and I just kind of, you know, I think I lost him as a friend there for a while, and then, you know, just a short while later, Player was formed, and you know the end of that story. So
yeah, exactly.
Once again, you know, things happen for a reason.
Exactly right. Yeah. Well, let me tell you about Baby Come Back, man. That is one of those timeless classics that nobody will ever get old listening to. You know, and that was
thank God. Thank God for that.
That was in my day too. You know, yeah. I was in just getting out of school, getting out of high school,
sure.
and all that. But
yeah.
What a great song! Now, how did you come up with that?
I was probably around the same days as I got off of that Uriah Heep gig. I was writing songs with, you know, just various people around L.A. And I was at this party one night, and everybody was dressed in white, and it was Robin Williams, a lot of stars there, you know. I was unknown. I was just there, and
right.
I bumped into this other guy who hadn't been given the dress code, obviously, because I was just in a T-shirt and jeans, and so was he. And we just started laughing about how we were not, you know, dressed the right way. Everybody was in white suits and stuff. And it was all candlelit, you know. And we just started yapping and having a beer. And I found out he was from Texas, and he was a songwriter. And we hit it off because he was so different than me. I was this English guy and pop guy, you know, and he was this Texas country singer.
Yeah.
And so we got together just like a week after that, and we started writing songs. And that was the beginning of everything. We wrote a handful of songs, and, you know, we started hawking them around L.A., pulled a couple other guys in for the harmonies, you know, and we started hawking them around, and you know, very little, everybody go, yeah, it's quite good, you know, nothing. And then one day in his garage, we came up with this idea, and we just started messing around with the chords, and it turned into Baby Come Back, and we kind of knew we had something. And so we were still doing the same thing. We were just shopping songs around. And the next people we played for were Lambert and Potter, who'd had mm-hmm. huge success.
Yeah.
You know, huge success as
right.
producers and writers. And we played it to them, and we did the first three songs, you know, and it was like, yeah, you know, not bad. And then we did Baby Come Back, and we finished it, and there was like this silence. And they didn't know what to say, you know. I swear this is true. And they just said, that sounds like a hit.
Yeah.
We're going to go talk to Al Corey, our friend Al Corey at RSO Records. And there it was right there. We did like a live rehearsal thing where everybody came down to watch us. We did about five songs, I think. Ended with Baby Come Back and promised this is true. I just had this weird feeling. I announced the song. I said, this is our fifth song. It's all producers in there, you know, record business people, no normal people. And I said, we're gonna do our first number one hit now. It's called Baby Come Back. Promise you
that?
That's true. And, you know, talk about, you know,
that's amazing.
Pushing things into happening, manifesting. You know, it became true. It's amazing.
It is amazing. You know, the song, not only it's a slow rock, but, you know, it appealed during the disco times as well.
Well, that's what's weird, because half the artists on RSO, they had Eric Clapton, you know, who
right.
we ended up touring with, but they had the Bee Gees, which
right.
at the time were in their second phase as disco guys, and they had a lot, you know, they had a lot of disco artists on that label, actually.
Well, I got to tell you, I did sell out there for a while. I'm a rocker, you know, from way back, but when disco came out, I did hit the clubs. And Baby Come Back was in every freaking club because it was a great slow dancer, man.
Yeah. The funny thing about Baby Come Back is it was also, like, I think it was like top five, might have been even number one.
Yeah, it was number one
on the Black R&B chart.
Oh, is that right?
And,
in R&B?
Yeah, and we went to Chicago and we did a gig on one of, I think we're on tour with Buzz Skaggs on the Silver
yep.
Degrees tour.
Yep.
And we're playing all these big arenas, you know, and it went number one while we were in the middle of that tour. And we were invited to go down to this R&B station on
yeah.
the south side of Chicago,
right.
you know, and, you know, I think they thought we were a black band, and all these little guys with their long hair and their fur coats jogged into the radio station, you know, and the guy was on air, and he's going, oh my lord, you're not going to believe this. And then they interviewed interviewed us, and it was like, it was really funny.
That is funny. You do sound R&B.
Because we were on the R&B chart.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
They thought we were a black band. But anyway, you know.
Definitely sound R&B.
Yeah.
I'm friends with Peter Rivera. Remember Rare Earth? Those guys were all white.
Now, this is funny. I'm doing a gig with him. I don't know where it is, but
really?
Somewhere at the beginning of the year, yeah.
Pretty cool.
I think it might be, it actually might be November.
Yep.
I'll let you know, because I'll talk to him and I'll tell him I spoke to him.
Yeah, you guys are going to mesh well. You'll definitely mesh well.
Yeah, I can't remember who else is on it. There's a whole bunch of people. It's in Florida.
Right.
But I'll give you the information.
Oh, if it's in Florida, I'll definitely go to it.
Where are you?
I'm in Florida. I'm in near Tampa.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's definitely in Florida. In fact, I think it's in Orlando.
Well, that's Orlando's only like an hour and a half from me, so yeah, I'll definitely go.
And I'll definitely send you the information. You can mention it on the air.
Okay.
The people there.
Oh, great. Definitely. Yeah, I'll definitely advertise it and everything.
Yeah, good.
That'll be great. It's kind of funny because I think it was you that mentioned some people thought Baby Come Back was from Hall & Oates.
Well, you know, once again, another story. We were doing a gig up in Clearwater, North Carolina. Northern California. This is like a little mountain town called Clearwater. And they've got this big club there. I was with LRB at the time. I was with LRB for like 8 years.
Yeah.
And, this was one of those gigs. It was Hall & Oates and LRB. And Daryl was like standing outside his dressing room, and I walked by, and he says, "Hey, are you the one from Player who went out with my ex-girlfriend?" And I said, "No, that was J.C. Crowley." And we had a little conversation, and we were laughing, and he said, "You know what our most requested song is?" And I said, "What?" He said, "Baby Come Back." Which is funny. And truthfully, we do a lot. I play a lot with Ambrosia these days.
Yeah. Good band.
With my band, you know, but I also go out solo and they back me. You know, they do their show and I come out and do songs with them. And, you know, they used to get asked a lot to play Baby Come Back too. So
that's
now they
funny.
Get to do it with me singing it, you know.
That's funny.
Yeah. What goes around.
What goes around is right.
Yeah.
Your bandmate, Ron Moss. He got into Hollywood, didn't he?
Yeah, he had a good career for 26 years as a soap actor.
Yeah, soap actor. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you have any interest? I know John Forcoli was acting. He did a lot of acting gigs.
I did a couple of things here and there. I was offered things, you know. I actually
right.
did a few stunt things.
Oh, did you? Stunts?
Here and there, too.
Really?
Which I really enjoyed, yeah. What was that series that was huge? I can never think of the name of it. It was Housewives. It was all these housewives who lived on this street, Wisteria Lane. What was that thing called? It was huge for a while. All your listeners now are going to know what this was, and I don't.
Probably,
anyway,
and I don't know what it is either.
And I did a stunt where a car. I was sitting at a wedding,
right?
And a car came crashing into the table, and I had like 2 seconds to jump before the car hit the table, you know. And I did. It was really exciting.
Wow,
my heart was pounding, you know, a lot of fun.
What made you want to do stunts?
It was just offered to me. In those days, I was, you know, young and crazy, and I'd try anything once.
Yeah.
So I did that a couple of times, and then I thought, nah, I'm going to get killed. I don't think I'll do this anymore. I'll leave it to the pros.
Yeah, exactly. Another hit you guys did with Player, This Time I'm In It for Love, that was another good song.
Well, that was number 10 on the Billboard chart. You know, a lot of people think Player was on, you know, one hit wonder, and it's absolutely untrue.
No, not at all.
And we had a bunch of top 50 songs, but
yep.
Everything was shadowed. I mean, a top number 10 is a big hit, you know, but
sure.
When you've had a number one for God knows how many weeks and you knock the Bee Gees off number one spot,
yeah.
You know, it overshadows everything.
Yeah.
And so, you know, pretty much all we're known for.
And you play with
that's
it?
My phone ringing. That's my other line. You can edit this out. I don't know if you can hear it or not.
Yeah, I can edit it. No problem.
Okay, good.
Don't worry about it.
It'll probably go a few months.
That's all right. I couldn't hear
it. Go ahead.
I get dogs barking, all kinds of stuff. Don't worry about it.
All right, good. I brought my dog in and she's in the cupboard. She's asleep, so.
Oh, she's asleep now?
Yeah.
You wrote so many songs for other people. Janet Jackson, Olivia Newton-John, Kenny Rogers. How did that work out? How did you work?
Well, that was all great. Now, that was after Player. After Player, I kept it going as long as I could, and the original band broke up, you know, and before Little River Band, I had like a 15-year career, movies and TV, where I just did a bunch of stuff, you know, a bunch of movies, which you mentioned a few of them. When I'm put on the spot, I have to read my own bio to remember all the stuff that I did, because I can't remember it, you know. And I had a real good career going. I got to the stage where people would just send me, you know, a tape for a little piece of a movie, and they'd say, write a song for this, whereas you usually have to do the casting call with all the other writers, you know, and you're lucky if you get it in. I was in. I just would get these calls, write a song for this, and it was in the movie, you know. So I was doing really great, and I was, you know, making a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I guess 1989, my manager, who also managed Little River Band at the time, he called me and he said, Graham Goebel has left Little River Band. And they've got a new album, Get Lucky, produced by Dennis Lambert, who produced us also.
Right.
And they said, they're doing a video in L.A. Would you like to stand in and be in the video? Because Graham's not there, you know. And so they shot it actually somewhere here in the Valley. I can't remember what it was called. Some little club. And I was in the video. And then we all said bye-bye, and about 2 weeks later, manager called me, and he said, do you want to go to Australia and tour with LRB for a couple of months, whatever? And I said, not really. I got a lot of work, you know, I don't really need to take the time off. And he said, just go give it a month, and if you don't, you know, if you don't want to continue, you'll have some fun, you'll go to the Great Barrier Reef, all this great stuff, and, you know, you can get back to work. Well, I ended up in the band for 8 years after that. And, you know, I had such a good time that month that I just hung out and did, like, you know, tons and tons of gigs every year.
Yeah.
I mean, it became pretty much, that was the career. And truthfully, my songwriting career, like, by the time I was finished with that stint, I came back to L.A., permanently, and all the guys, all the music supervisors that I used to work with, they were all gone.
Really?
They moved on, and young kids had taken their place, you know?
Yeah.
And so I tried to break back in, and I didn't know anybody anymore. And so that was a real, you know, disappointment. And, you know, I kind of got it going somewhat again with a bunch of new people.
Right.
And got a few more good movies and stuff. And then I started going out and playing again because I missed it. I started doing gigs, and we did sporadic things for a few years, and then this yacht rock thing happened.
Yeah.
And now I'm out. I mean, I got more gigs than I can handle.
Yeah.
Over the past 10 years, I mean, I just got back a few days ago, and I'm going out again this weekend to pick it up again. So you know, it's kind of you can't give it up.
Yeah.
I can't stop myself from doing gigs. It's crazy.
Have you been on a cruise? Have you done one of those cruise gigs yet?
I've done about six of them.
Really?
We're actually doing one in February. We're doing the Rock and Romance one. We did it 2-3 years ago.
Those are big.
Exactly. But everybody is on it. I mean, if you look it up, the Rock and Romance Cruise 19, it's like everyone, Cheap Trick is on it. It's, oh my God, everybody you could think of is on that cruise. Little River Band, Firefall, Ambrosia, Player. It's kind of a yacht rock cruise, but they're not calling it a yacht rock cruise. You know, Pete Frampton's on it, I think, Christopher Cross, a whole bunch of people. And it's going to be quite a cruise. The last one we did was amazing.
The only problem, that it sells out so quickly, you know, you gotta.
This one particularly does. We've done other cruises that were not quite as, you know, yacht rock cruises that didn't have quite as many acts on, but this particular cruise is ridiculous. I mean, it's just pumping.
Yeah.
All hours of the night and day, there's like, it's just crazy. They've got so many rooms with people playing that, you know, the punters are like just walking from one show to another and out to another and seeing everybody, you know. It's amazing. So I'm looking forward to doing that again. It'd be fun.
Yeah, it's Woodstock on the high seas.
Pretty much, yeah. Except a little later than Woodstock. I think all the people that are on, they're not quite from the 60s, 70s onwards, you know.
I just want to remind the audience some of the groups you've played with, I guess, with player Boss Gags, on the Silk Degrees tour, Eric Clapton's Slow Hand tour, the Heart Dog and Butterfly tour, Kenny Loggins' Footloose tour. I mean,
and Gino Vannelli was off. We loved Gino Vannelli. Everybody in my band loved him.
He's a good guy.
That was our first. We did a short cruise with him, East Coast stuff. And, you know, we'd never really done a gig. We were just like a bunch of young kids. And we'd just been rehearsing for a couple of weeks. And I can't remember what the gig was, but I think it was in the Bronx. It was some huge town hall thing, some big theater.
Right.
And we walked in with our little guitar cases. We were supporting him. And synthesizers hadn't kicked in yet. You know, it was the beginning of the machines.
Yeah.
And everybody, his whole band was synthesizers, his brother Joe, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they had this huge sound, and they were doing their sound check. And we just stood in the wings, and we were like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
I've never heard anything like this, you know. And so, anyway, you know, we did fine in the end, but that was our first tour. And then it was the Silk Degrees, you know, as Boz was taking off. And we hit number one in the middle of that. And then we had about 6 months off, and RSO called us and said, you need to do a second album, and we're putting you out with Eric Clapton on this tour. So all going to be arena rock again, you know, 30,000 people a night, and you need to harden up the album, and you need to harden up your act, basically.
Right.
No longer be a blue-eyed soul band. Stick some rock and roll in there. So Crowley and I went to work, and we came up with, you know, a good handful of rock and roll tunes that would suit arena rock. Of course, we'd still do Baby Come Back and the other hits. And we got through the Eric Clapton tour.
Amazing.
Which, you know what the audience for Eric Clapton is. It's not exactly soft rock audience, you know. But we did great. It was fantastic. And then a little while later, we did the Dog and Butterfly tour with Hart, and that was fantastic. Same thing, you know, arenas. And the last tour player did was with Kenny Loggins, which I think was the Footloose tour. Footloose. I may be wrong there.
Yeah, you're right. Footloose tour.
It wasn't called Footloose. It was when he had Footloose out. And the movie was out. So, and we had a big fight, you know, a little bit too much excess in the band by that stage.
Right.
Pretty much everything that was available the band was doing. And, you know, fighting the whole thing. And, and we broke up at the end of that tour.
Yeah.
The original band, you know.
Yeah.
And I went on after that to do another four albums or something as player.
Well, it's a good thing you had so much talent, you know, writing music for everybody else. And
exactly, yeah. That's what I say.
Man, oh man. Yeah, you wrote Twist of Fate for Olivia Newton-John, and After All This Time for Kenny.
I had a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
It wasn't really trying. It's just whatever I would write for me just seemed to work for a lot of other people. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. That's pretty cool, though.
Yeah.
What about, is there going to be a new album coming out pretty soon, huh?
There is. It's about three quarters done.
All right.
I've had a lawsuit, you know, recently, and
I did read about that. Yeah.
We don't like to talk about it because, you know, any band that's around as long as this, you know, you're going to have, at the Eagle, everybody's had their lawsuits, you know. So I go out now as Peter Beckett's player.
Right.
And sometimes, but mostly I've been going out as Peter Beckett, the voice of player.
Right.
Playing with, you know, various. I play with Orleans, I play with Ambrosia, play with the Yacht Rock Review, a whole bunch of different bands. And, you know, I actually enjoy that a whole lot. I go out, I do, you know, four or five songs, and it works great. I do Baby Come Back, and people go crazy. Good fun.
So this album is, when do you think it'll be released?
I was close to releasing it, and during so-called lawsuit, I had to pull the album off, and I've been reworking it, and I'm looking to add about four new songs. Shouldn't take too long. Once this tour is over, I've got most of October and November off, so I'll finish it up, and then, you know, we'll see what it sounds like. There it will go. We'll see how it does.
Who's going to be? Do we know anybody that's going to be on the record?
Well, I have a really good band right now.
Okay.
I have Burley Drummond from Ambrosia is our drummer, which is pretty funny because he was our drummer many years ago, and I've got a guy called Buster, who's a crazy guy, Buster Eckery, who's done some work with Steely Dan.
Oh, wow.
I've got Mark is our bass player, and he's worked with Johnny Winter. And our guitarist, who's a monster, Rob Math, he's actually a heavy metal dude. He plays with a band called Leatherwolf, and he goes and does all these big, those big metal shows in Germany.
Really?
So yeah, he's really like a heavy metal dude, but there's something about him. He's very well rounded. He plays great country guitar, and he can play anything basically.
Sure.
But he lends an edge to the new band, and the new band is great. I'm just telling you.
Sounds like it.
That's the band that's going to be on the cruise in February.
Oh, great! And maybe a tour. Maybe a tour after the new album, right?
Well, we'll see. Yeah.
You like touring so much.
At the drop of a hat. We also have an acoustic set that we've started to do. We've done a few gigs just acoustic, just like a 1 hour set with Burley plays instead of drums. He plays that box thing, whatever they have, the cajon,
Yeah.
And we just play acoustic guitars, and it's actually working out great. It sounds really good. So we may incorporate that into the middle of the real player set,
So what are we looking at? Are we looking for a little bit more rock and roll? Are we looking for kind of soft rock?
It's a mixture.
A mixture?
I used to have a problem with this in the old days when I was producing the player's albums. I would feel really weird because how can I put this? I'm very eclectic in my writing.
Sure.
And, one song would be country, another one would be pop, another one would be R&B, another one would be rock and roll, And I always felt really weird when I'd finish an album. I'd go, this is too diverse, It doesn't go together. I always was looking for a vein where the music all sounds pretty much the same. And I got over that a while ago because, think about the Beatles,
That's right.
The Beatles were all over the place.
They were.
And so, I just gave up looking for that band, and now whatever comes out of me goes on the album.
Good.
Unless it's too crazy.
Hey, does that mean...
I have a couple of country things on.
Uh-huh.
I actually wrote a song called Baby Don't Come Back.
Really?
And it's a boot scootin', in fact, I'll send it to you if you want at some stage of the game.
Awesome.
That's gonna be on there. It's a country song. It's got, violin and the whole thing. It's kinda like a rock country song. It's really good.
I'm looking forward to that. That sounds pretty good.
That'll be the star of the album.
That's going to be the star, huh? That's going to be the hit.
Hopefully, yeah.
Hey, all you got to do is say, here's my number one hit, and it'll happen.
There you go. Maybe if I work it up with the band and I go out and do
exactly.
a gig and say that live on stage,
that's
maybe
right.
people manifest.
History repeats itself.
Again, yeah.
Peter, here's a question I ask everybody, and I get some very interesting answers. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie, to perform, collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Oh, my God. Anyone from the past or present?
Or present. Yeah, they could be deceased. That's fine.
Well, I always loved... No, I'm not going to say that. I loved Roy Orbison.
Roy Orbison. Yeah.
I would love to do something with Don Henley.
Right.
Daryl Hall. Mm-hmm. Obviously, and it'll never happen. But McCartney, of course.
Well,
absolutely McCartney.
You would think that would happen since you guys are both from Liverpool. Come on.
Yeah. It's not going to happen. I actually know Brian Ray from the current band.
Yeah.
He's done a few gigs with me with the Yacht Rock Review guys.
Right.
I don't. McCartney went back to Liverpool. And he did that surprise show at the Philharmonic Pub.
Right.
Philharmonic Pub was a pub I used to go drink in when I was a young kid, And he did that thing where he went back to Liverpool with, what's the guy from the night show, the late night show, the English guy?
Oh, yeah. I know who you're talking about, the heavyset guy.
So it was a great thing. He went back to Liverpool with him. And they put on this, and it was filmed in that show. He just set up the band in the Philharmonic Pub, and all the punters were in there drinking, and they had no idea. And the curtains opened, and the band just Anthony and his van.
I saw that.
Took a while, and you see it. They start to realize, and they're like, what? It was great.
I saw that. Then the curtain closes, and it opens again later, right?
Yeah. They did a few times, and then it closed, and they start again later. I thought that was fantastic.
That was
cool. I don't know how many times McCartney had been back, you know, in recent times to Liverpool before he did that.
He did a thing,
I too,
with...
I went to McCartney's house, like, a month ago when I just went back to Liverpool.
Oh, really?
I drove past his house. And the place I went to school, Sir Francis Xavier's, was in Woolton, where McCartney's from, and it was 3 doors away from Strawberry Fields.
Wow.
So I went and saw my old school, and I walked down, and I took a photograph outside the gate of Strawberry Fields. And I went to Penny Lane, all the places in Liverpool, you know.
What an influence the Beatles had on everybody.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's amazing.
Yep.
It really is. But you know what? The Beatles got a lot of their early stuff from R&B guys, you know? From the blues guys, the R&B guys.
Well, I know the story of this. You know, Tabla Motown was huge in England because the GIs, the American GIs, were all based in Germany.
Right.
And at least the Liverpool bands, which I give credit for that whole influence, the Liverpool bands all used to go and play in Germany. I did it. We'd go and do these one-month stints in one club in one city. We'd play like 5 one-hour sets a night. You know, imagine trying to do that now.
Jeez.
It was ridiculous, you know.
Crazy.
And there'd be sailors in there throwing bottles at each other. It was crazy.
Huh.
But the Liverpool bands did these stints for years and years and years, and they'd run into these soldiers, these GIs, who'd all be playing the R&B stuff,
right,
and the Motown stuff,
yeah,
and the Liverpool bands would bring it back to Liverpool and learn the songs and do them at such places at the Cavern, and the Beatles were one of those bands,
mm-hmm,
and that was the whole Tamla Motown influence into the Liverpool band,
right,
which turned out to be the Mersey sound,
yeah,
you know, when you mixed it all up together. And I give Liverpool credit for that. And in later days, I moved down to London during, you know, the days of Clapton, the blues days.
Yeah.
When all the John Mayall, you know, and I give total credit to London for,
yep,
you know, the heyday of blues in England, which they sold back to America, strangely enough.
That is weird.
And
isn't
I
it?
Actually worked with B.B. King a couple of times, too.
Really?
I actually produced him on one song for a TV show called Shake, Rattle, and Roll.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't real well. He just had a stroke. And he was singing, but he wasn't all there, you know, and I was helping him, showing him when to come in and right, sing the line and everything, you know. And after it was all over, he thanked me very sincerely, and he gave me a photo, and he said, thank you so much,
mm-hmm,
Pete, for helping me through the day. I've got the photo in my studio, you know. And he was a lovely guy.
Yeah, yeah.
One of my, you know, favorite, you know, you were asking me before, he's one of the best people I ever met.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, B.B. King was with us for a long time, you know.
Long time.
He's one of those guys, him and Ray Charles have always been around, you know.
That's right, yeah. And they still are, actually, in their own way, you know.
Exactly. You're talking about John Mayall. He was on the show. I covered his 80th birthday. It was here in Sarasota, and hung out with him backstage. And what a nice guy, you know. But, you know, he's in his 80s now, and he's still out there. He sounds great.
Well, he's, you know, you've got to give him credit. That he was, you know, he was one of the guys in London.
Yeah.
I was a kid when I moved down to London. I just left that band of thoughts. You know,
right.
I was only like 18 or something. And that whole movement was just starting up. And he was, I mean, everybody went through his band. All those guitarists went through the Yardbirds and Jimmy Page, Jeff Beck, Clapton, you know, everybody, all those guitarists who became huge,
mm-hmm,
they all went through John Mayall's band, and he was the guy.
There
were several guys like Hep Brown at the time, and like there was a band called Steam Packet, Long John Baudry, Rod Stewart was the singer. He was just a spiky haired dude with a husky voice singing blues, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that whole era produced some amazing people, and John Mayall had a lot to do with it.
Well, he was incredible. You know, he sets up his own equipment, you know, before the show. I mean, during the show, people are seated, and he's setting up his equipment. It's amazing.
Yeah, I know the feeling. I actually have my wife do it now.
Do you really?
No, I'm just kidding. No, they always have stage people, you know, but it's, I think the last time I had a huge crew was Little River Band, where they actually toured with everything. We had the bus, and then we had a semi-truck with sound, lights, everything, you know, whole soundboard and everything. They carried everything with them, and I travel a lot lighter than that now.
You know, I just saw the Little River Band recently. They were in Clearwater, and they were with Firefall and Pablo Cruz.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of a yacht rock.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, there's nobody in the band anymore. That's an original guy. You know.
Yeah. Well, that's got nothing to do with me. I enjoyed. I love all the original. I was in the band, luckily, when a lot of the original guys are still there, Glenn Shorrock and everything, and I really enjoyed being in Little River Band. But, Wayne is the lead singer now. Wayne was there forever.
Yeah.
Wayne, I mean, God, talk about a road dog, you know. They're a great band. The original guys are great. Those guys are great.
Yeah, they sound good. I mean, they play the hits just like they're supposed to be played.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
They're excellent. Yeah. Peter, what's next for you, man? I mean, you got the new album coming out. You're finishing the tour. What else?
I got, literally a week off. And I don't really have a week off. I'm doing a bunch of stuff. But I just got back a few days ago after a whole bunch of gigs in a row. Like I told you, the south, straight to the north, down to the south again. And I'm taking a few days trying to get sane again, and then I'm going to finish up this tour, and then I'm going to finish up that album.
Okay.
And, that'll be the next thing for me. I have a book that I've been writing for 15 years.
15 years?
It's called A Life in the Day.
Right.
You know, it's a juxtapose, a day in the life. And it's all about the early, it's about everything. It's about the early days in Liverpool during the Beatles, growing up in Liverpool and going through that whole Beatles thing, coming to America, having hits, and, part of it's Little River Band, and then I'm honest about the other side of the mountain down, so to speak.
Right.
When you've done the biggest things you're ever going to do, which is fine, and what happens after that. And I've been truthful about it, and I've dedicated to kids who, or their parents who are thinking of getting into the music business. And, I'm trying to be honest and say, read this, and you'll know whether you want to get into this whole mess. You read the book.
Well, let me know when you're done with it. We'll promote the hell out of it.
Well, it's close. I'm real close.
Okay.
To be honest with you, I have people interested.
Okay.
In England and America.
Good.
And I just need an ending. And I'm looking for that big flash to go out on.
Okay.
And that'll be the end of the book. I have plenty of stuff in there.
Right.
But I keep going, and I'm looking for that. I hope it's not me dying. I'm looking for something positive, something good to end the book with. And everybody who's had a little peek at it is, blown away by it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I'm quite confident in it. It's pretty funny, too,
Yeah. Well,
it's all the truth. Well, every word in it is the truth.
Hook up,
and I've given away a few things, so...
Hook up with McCartney.
People knocking on my door, I can tell you now.
Hook up with McCartney, and that'll be the end.
That would be it, wouldn't it?
That would be it, yeah.
That would be it. Or somebody else does a cover of Baby Come Back and makes number one.
There you go. Even better.
Yeah, I'll pray for it.
Peter, I want to thank you so much, man, for being on the show today.
It's a pleasure, Ray.
Real pleasure. Thank you for all the great music you've given us through the years, and we look forward to the new album. And a tour probably after that. And don't forget to come to Florida.
Well, we are. I'm coming there three times before the end of the year.
Good, good, good.
And I'll send you the info, okay?
Send me the info. I really appreciate it. I'll be there. And
if anybody wants to know what's going on, just tell them to go on to, player-theband.com.
Okay.
You have to put the dash in there. It's very important. Player-theband.com. And also, if you put player... or Peter Beckett, it's Facebook.
Yep.
All the gigs, the upcoming gigs, and everything that's going on is in both places.
No problem. We'll mention that over and over again. And we'll put you in all my websites. Like I said, you're going to be everywhere. I do a great job of promoting. So,
well, come to one of the gigs in Florida.
I will.
And let me know, and I'll pull you back and, we'll have some fun.
Yeah, I'll cover the show for sure.
Great.
Yep. Thanks, Peter.
All right, mate. So if you go on, you'll see where the gigs are. I will send you the information for the Florida gigs.
Okay.
And we'll talk some more.
That'll be great. Thank you so much.
All right, Ray.
All right. Cheers.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you for your interest.
Take care. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
For more information about Peter Beckett, visit www.peterbeckett/player.com. It's actually not a slash, it's a dash. www.peterbeckett-player.com or www.facebook.com/peterbeckett.player. Very special thanks to Jeff Albright from the Albright Entertainment Group for arranging this interview with Peter Beckett, and of course, the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsome, a BBS Radio, for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, please contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. And it is real news, people. Don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, A True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business, available now at Amazon.com. I promise you will live it. And coming soon, The Rockstar Chronicles, another book by me. Stay tuned for that. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.